A blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Turner. Sparks shoot out of a radio transmitter atop the revolving Earth. A radio picture. Now, in a black and white film, Trees Edge a Flowing Brook, titles appear. Radio Pictures presents Anne of Green Gables with Anne Shirley, Tom Brown, O.P. Heggie, and Helen Wesley. Produced by Kenneth McGowan. Copyright 1934, RKO Radio Pictures Incorporated. This film is described by Descriptive Video Service, a division of the Media Access Group at WGBH, with funding by the U.S. Department of Education. Described by Nicole Savickas, read by Margot Stage. For more about DVS, call 1-800-333-1203 or visit our website at dvs.wgbh.org. More titles. Directed by George Nichols, Jr. Screenplay by Sam Mintz. From the book, Anne of Green Gables by L.M. Montgomery. Published by L.C. Page & Company, Incorporated. Photographed by Lucien Andois, ASC. Musical director, Max Steiner. Edited by Arthur Schmidt. Now, outside a farmhouse, a little girl picks flowers in a yard with a white picket fence. A woman inside knocks on a window, then holds her hands about a foot apart. The girl nods and picks a long-stemmed flower. The woman opens the window as a horse-drawn buggy passes.
Look, Diana, quick. Is that Matthew Cuthbert?
Yes, Mother. Why are you so surprised?
Where can he be going? He never goes to town this time of year. He never visits.
Maybe he's just taking a drive.
Matthew Cuthbert wouldn't dress up for that.
The dimple-cheeked Diana watches her mother hurry out to the porch.
He isn't driving fast enough to be going for a doctor. I'm clean puzzled. I won't have a moment's peace of mind till I find out from his sister Marilla.
Can I go with you, Mother?
No, when you're through with the flowers, you can get your churning.
Now, a matronly woman sits at a table polishing silverware.
Come in.
Diana's mother enters.
Good morning, Marilla.
Good morning, Rachel. And how is everyone at Barry's Hollow?
Oh, we're all pretty well. I was kind of afraid you weren't, though. Especially when I saw your brother riding by today. Thought maybe he was going to the doctor's.
Matthew's gone to Bright River. We're getting a little boy from an orphanage in Nova Scotia, and he's coming on the train this afternoon.
A boy? Marilla, you and Matthew Cuthbert adopting a boy from an orphan asylum? Well, the world is certainly turning upside down. I'll be surprised at nothing after this. Nothing. What on earth put such a notion into your head?
Well, Matthew's getting on in years. You know he's 60, and he isn't so spry as he once was. His heart troubles him a good deal. And you know how desperate hard it is to get hired help. Can I get you a cup of tea?
Now, how can a body drink tea when they're so excited they're about ready to burst? How'd you know the boy was coming?
Well, we had a telegram from Mrs. Spencer saying she'd dropped the boy off at Bright River Station on our way to White Sands. Matthew's gone to meet him.
Well, Marilla, you know I pride myself on speaking my mind. Now that it's all clear to me, I'll just tell you plain, I think you're doing a mighty risky thing. Only last week I read in the paper where a man and his wife took a boy out of an orphanage, and he set fire to the house. Set it on purpose. And there was a case over in New Brunswick where an orphan asylum child put strychnine in the well. And the whole family died in fearful agony. Only it was a girl in that instance.
Well, we're not getting a girl.
She scrubs a candlestick. Now, at the Bright River train depot, a man sits on an overturned box, smoking a cigarette and whittling a small piece of wood. Matthew rides up in his buggy, wearing a dark suit and hat. He climbs down and walks toward a railroad worker.
How are you, Angus? Was that the 135 just left?
Yep. You're a bit late. Passenger dropped off for you, Matthew.
That's what I've come for.
I asked her to go into the depot, and she told me she preferred to stay outside.
Her? She?
Yeah. Said she wouldn't go inside because there's no scope for the imagination.
But we're not expecting a girl. It's a boy I've come for.
She won't have any trouble explaining. She's got a tongue of her own.
Matthew walks up onto the platform where a girl wearing a straw hat sits on a bench looking down the tracks. Matthew steals a glance at her, then looks away, putting his hand to his face. Seeing him, she smiles and walks over.
I suppose you're Mr. Matthew Cuthbert. My name is Anne Shirley, Anne spelled with an E. I was so afraid you weren't coming for me, and I was imagining all the things that could have happened to prevent you.
You're sure there isn't some mistake?
Well, you're Mr. Matthew Cuthbert, aren't you?
Yes.
Well, if you're Mr. Matthew Cuthbert, there can be no mistake. Mrs. Spencer told me to wait right here for you.
Matthew stares at Anne, his eyes wide. She smiles back at him. Reluctantly, he turns and walks toward her bag.
Oh, I can carry it. It isn't heavy. And if it isn't carried a certain way, the handle falls off. So you better let me do it, because I know the exact knack of it.
The handle falls off.
I must have lost the knack.
Anne tucks the bag under her arm and smiles.
Well, don't you think we better be going?
Matthew stares off.
I guess it'll be all right.
He takes her bag, and she beams at him. Later, the sun shines brightly as the buggy moves down a country road. Anne, her hair braided in two long pigtails, clasps her hands in her lap and smiles broadly. Next to her, Matthew frowns.
We've got to drive a long piece yet, haven't we? Oh, I'm glad, because I love driving. Oh, it seems so wonderful that I'm going to live with you and belong to you.
Matthew looks quickly at Anne.
Well, as I was saying, I never really belonged to anyone before, just to the asylum. And that was worse than anything you can imagine. Mrs. Spencer said it was wicked of me to talk like that, but I don't mean to be wicked. Am I talking too much?
Oh, you can talk as much as you like. I don't mind.
Oh, I know you and I are going to get along just wonderfully.
Later, Matthew smokes a pipe.
Oh, I just love this place already. I've always heard that Prince Edward Island was the most beautiful place in the world. I used to imagine that I was living here, but I never really expected that I would. Do you imagine much?
Well, no.
At the asylum, I used to imagine all kinds of things. Why, sometimes I'd imagine that perhaps the girl who sat next to me was really the daughter of a belted earl who had been stolen away from her parents in infancy by a cruel nurse who had died before she could confess.
Matthew stares at her. Later, white-flowered trees line the road. Anne holds a branch of the flowers.
Isn't this beautiful? What did that tree all white and lacy make you think of?
Well, now, I don't know.
Why, a bride, of course. A bride in white, with a lovely, misty veil.
Matthew lifts an eyebrow.
Just now, I feel pretty nearly perfectly happy. I can't feel exactly perfectly happy because... Well, what color would you call this?
Her pigtail.
It's red, isn't it?
Yes, it's red. And that's why I can't feel perfectly happy. I know I'm skinny and a wee bit freckled and my eyes are green, but I can imagine I have a beautiful rose leaf complexion and lovely starry violet eyes, but I cannot imagine my red hair away. I do my best, but it's no use. It will be my lifelong sorrow.
Matthew smiles.
I read of a girl once in a novel who was divinely beautiful. Have you ever imagined what it must be like to be divinely beautiful?
Well, no. No, I haven't.
Oh, I have often. Which would you rather be, angelically good or dazzlingly clever, or just divinely beautiful?
Well, no. I don't exactly know.
Anne stares at him.
Anyhow, we're getting nigh home.
Later, the buggy pulls up to a white picket fence in front of a three-story house. The front of the house has a gable, a triangular wall on the third story that juts into the roof. Anne marvels at the house.
That's the house.
Why, it has gables. What do you call it?
Oh, just the house.
What would you think if I gave it a new name? Something that would sound more euphonious. Now, let me see. Gables, and they're green. Green Gable.
Matthew stops and turns to look at her.
I think that's nice.
From now on, that's what we'll call it, Green Gables. Oh, it's too beautiful to be true. I know I shall live here until I grow to be a real old lady with gray hair.
Anne stops on the porch and looks around. Matthew opens the front door, then steps inside. She follows him in, gaping at the furnishings of the front room.
I'm overwhelmed.
Anne bends down to smell some flowers on a table.
Marilla.
Marilla turns to look at them from the other room. Staring with her mouth open, she walks stiffly to the foyer.
Marilla, this is...
How do you do?
Marilla scowls at the girl.
Matthew Cuthbert? Who's that?
I wanted to tell you.
Where's the boy?
That's what I wanted to tell you. The station master at Bright River.
Never mind him. Where's the boy?
There wasn't any boy. There was only her.
We sent word to Mrs. Spencer to bring a boy.
Well, she didn't. She only brought her. So I figured she couldn't be left there, no matter what the mistake was.
You figured. A pretty kettle of fish. This is what comes of sending word instead of going ourselves.
You don't want me? You don't want me because I'm not a boy. Well, nobody ever did want me. I might have known it was all too beautiful to last.
Anne buries her face in her hands.
Well, don't cry about it.
I'm not crying, only... This is the most tragical thing that's ever happened to me.
Matthew smiles at Marilla.
What's your name?
Will you please call me Cordelia?
Call you Cordelia?
Don't you think it's a pretty name?
Is that your name?
Well, no, it isn't exactly my name, but... Oh, I would love to be called Cordelia.
I don't know what on earth you mean.
It's such a perfectly elegant name, don't you think?
If Cordelia isn't your name, what is it?
Anne Shirley. Isn't Anne an unromantic name?
No. Anne is a good, plain, sensible name. You've no need to be ashamed of it.
Oh, I'm not ashamed of it. Only I like Cordelia better. You know, I've always imagined I should have been named Cordelia.
Oh.
Well, if you're going to call me Anne, please spell it with an E.
What difference does it make how it's spelled?
Oh, it makes a lot of difference. When you print out Anne, it looks dreadful, but Anne with an E looks distinguished. So if you'll only call me Anne with an E, I'll try and reconcile myself to it.
Very well. Anne with an E. How did you happen to be brought instead of a boy?
If I were very beautiful and had nut brown hair, would you keep me?
No. A girl would be of no use to us, but don't stand there gaping. Come along. Bring your bag. Now you're here, I suppose we'll have to put you somewheres. Now, take your hat off. You'll have to have some supper, of course.
Oh, I can't eat. I can never eat when I'm in the depths of despair.
Depths of despair?
Can you eat when you're that way?
I've never been that way.
Well, can't you even imagine you're in the depths of despair?
No, I can't. Here's your room for tonight. Wash up and come down to supper.
Yes, ma'am.
Anne smiles at the room. Marilla walks downstairs into the kitchen where Matthew washes his hands.
Tomorrow I'm going to find out who's responsible for all this rigmarole. I'll drive over and see Mrs. Spencer, that's certain. This girl's got to go back to the asylum tomorrow.
I suppose so.
You suppose so? Don't you know it?
Well, now, she's a real nice little thing, Marilla. It's kind of a pity to send her back when she's so set on staying here.
Matthew Cuthbert, I believe that child has bewitched you. I can see as plain you want to keep her.
You should have heard her talking coming from the station.
I don't like children who have so much to say. As far as I'm concerned, it's a closed book.
I can hire a boy to help me. And she'd be company for you.
I'm not suffering for company. And she's going right back where she came from.
Marilla slops some stew into a bowl. The next morning, she sits in the buggy as Matthew stows Anne's bag in the footwell.
Look out for my feet.
Anne stands on the walk, staring at the house.
Hurry, child.
I was just taking a farewell look at the place. You see, in the years to come, I'm going to look back upon Green Gables as a beautiful dream that I hope will always haunt me. Don't you think that
girl... You can think about it on the road. Never mind that now.
Marilla takes Anne's hand and helps her into the buggy.
Goodbye, Mr. Cuthbert. I shall never forget your kindness.
Goodbye.
Get up.
They start off.
Matthew, don't forget to take the butter out of the churn. And be sure you close the gate to the pasture. If Mrs. Barry comes over, return that sugar I borrowed.
Matthew watches them go. Now, outside a house, Anne and Marilla meet a well-dressed woman.
But my dear Mrs. Spencer, I can't understand how such a mistake could happen.
There's no harm done, Miss Cuthbert. I'm sure Mrs. Lewis will take it.
They walk to the front door. Inside, a little boy playing with blocks stands and looks out the window.
Mama, Mrs. Spencer's here with another lady.
A plainly dressed woman walks out of the kitchen carrying a baby and a long-handled spoon. She opens the front door.
Good morning. This is Miss Cuthbert, Mrs. Lewis. And this is the girl I told you about.
Come in.
Marilla looks around at the simple furnishings, her lips pursed.
I got a stew on the fire. I'll be be right back.
Sit down, Miss Cuthbert.
Marilla frowns down at a chair, then crosses the room.
I still can't understand how it happened.
She blows the dust off a high-backed rocking chair, then sits.
However in the world you made such a mistake.
I understand how you feel about it. That's why I brought you here. It can all be straightened out. I'm sure Mrs. Blewett will take Anne. She's so anxious to get anyone to help with the children.
A girl follows Mrs. Blewett.
I'm sorry to keep you waiting, Mrs. Spencer. So much to do.
She walks over to Anne, looking her up and down.
What's your name?
Anne Shirley.
How old are you?
14.
Well, there ain't much to you, but you look wiry. Don't know but what you're kind of the best after all. If I take you, you'll have to be a good girl. You know, good and smart and respectful. Not expect you to earn your keep. No mistake about that.
Anne casts a forlorn look toward Marilla, who firmly meets her gaze, then turns away, pressing her lips in a tight line.
Well, I suppose I might as well take her off your hands right now.
Frowning, Marilla regards Anne, who shifts her pleading gaze away. Marilla's face softens, and her frown fades slightly.
Well, I don't know. I think I'd better take her home again and talk it over with Matthew. I oughtn't to do anything without consulting him.
Marilla stands and walks to the door. Anne's eyes widen and she smiles, looking up.
If we make up our minds not to keep her, I'll bring or send her back tomorrow. Will that be all right, Mrs. Blewett?
Well, I suppose it'll have to be.
Good day.
Marilla bows and walks out, followed by Anne and Mrs. Spencer. Later, Marilla and Matthew sit in front of a fireplace.
I wouldn't give a dog I like to that Blewett woman.
She eyes her brother, who stares off.
Matthew, aren't you going to say anything?
He fixes his pipe.
I wish you were more like other men and would talk things out. A body would answer back then, argue you into reason. What's to be done with men who just look?
Marilla ties off her sewing and leaves the room. Smiling, Matthew strikes a match on his boot and lights his pipe. Upstairs, Anne turns down the blankets on the bed.
Here's your nightgown.
Anne steps over to Marilla.
Thank you.
Get into it.
Anne looks down and walks away. Marilla frowns.
Don't forget to say your prayers.
Do you think they're essential?
Why, what do you mean? Weren't you taught to say your prayers?
Well, I used to at the Asylum Sunday School, but weekdays I'm afraid I was just too tired.
Well...
Marilla sits down.
You'll say your prayers while you're under my roof.
Why, of course, if you want me to.
In her nightgown, Anne stands in front of Marilla.
Kneel down.
Now, that's the part I never could understand. Why must people kneel down to pray? Now, if I really wanted to pray, I'd go out into a great big field all alone. And then I'd look up at the sky, the beautiful sky that looks as if there was no end to its blueness. I'd imagine it was the dome of a great cathedral or the canopy of heaven. And then I'd just feel a prayer.
Marilla's frown softens as she looks at Anne.
Well, what am I to say?
Well, Anne, I think you're big enough to pray for yourself. Just thank God for his blessings. And ask him humbly for the things you want.
Well, I'll try and do my best. Gracious Heavenly Father, I thank thee for everything. As for the things I especially want, they're so numerous it would take a great deal of time to name them. So I'll only mention the two most important. Please let me stay here. And please make me beautiful when I grow up. I remain yours respectfully, Anne Shirley.
A smile plays on Marilla's lips.
There. Did I do all right?
Yes.
Marilla's gaze hardens and she moves to the bed. She adjusts a pillow and pulls back the blankets. Anne gets into bed and Marilla tucks her in. Anne smiles contentedly.
Good night, Anne.
Good night.
Marilla blows out an oil lamp and walks to the door.
Oh, Miss Cuthbert. Cuthbert. I just remembered. I should have said amen instead of yours respectfully, shouldn't I? Do you suppose it will make any difference?
No, I don't suppose it will.
Marilla shuts the door and Anne snuggles into bed. In the hall, Marilla pauses. Her frown dissolves into a wide smile. The next morning, Anne sits at the breakfast table. Sullen-faced, she plays with her food and rests her cheek on her hand. Marilla begins to clear the table.
Come on, child. Finish your breakfast.
Oh, I'm all finished.
Why, you haven't eaten anything.
Won't you tell me if you're going to send me back? I've tried to be patient all morning, but I just can't bear it any longer. Please tell me.
Marilla looks out the window.
Go tidy your room and dress your best.
But it's all tidy, and this is my best.
Then go wash your hands and hurry. I just saw Mrs. Barry coming up the path, and I want you to look your nicest.
Marilla opens the door for Rachel.
Good morning, Marilla.
Come in, Rachel.
Thank you. I do hope everything's all right so far. It's a great responsibility you've taken on yourself. There's no telling how a child like that will turn out.
They sit in the parlor.
I don't want to discourage you.
I'm not feeling discouraged. I suppose you want to see Anne.
Anne? A girl?
Yes, a girl. Anne? Anne Shirley!
Anne walks in, drying her hands. Marilla grabs the towel from her.
This is Mrs. Barry.
How do you do?
Rachel stares sternly at Anne.
Well, they didn't pick you for looks. A bit skinny. Lawful heart, did anyone ever see such hair? Red as carrots.
How dare you say I'm skinny? And how dare you say I'm redheaded? You're an impolite, rude, unfeeling woman, and I hate you.
Anne.
How would you like to have nasty things said about you? How would you like to be told that you're ugly and you're gossipy and you're sour as an old crabapple?
Anne! Anne Shirley?
Anne runs out.
Well, I don't envy you your job of bringing that up.
You shouldn't have twitted her about her looks, Rachel.
Marilla Cuthbert.
I'm not trying to excuse her, but we must make allowances. Perhaps she hasn't been taught what's right. And you were hard on her, Rachel.
I see I'll have to be very careful about what I say after this. Orphans brought from goodness knows where seem to be considered before anything else. Well, if you take my advice, and I don't suppose you will, you'll do the talking to her with a good-sized birch switch. Goodbye, Marilla. Come down to see me as often as you can. But don't expect me to visit here again if I'm to be flown at and insulted in such a fashion.
Marilla smiles faintly.
Goodbye, Rachel.
Marilla strides briskly through the kitchen and out the back door. Pausing in the yard, she glances around. Her gaze lights on Anne, who leans against a bench built around a tree and sobs into the crook of her arm. Marilla approaches and stands over her, hands on her hips.
That was a nice way for you to behave. And of all people, you would pick on Rachel Barry.
She hadn't any right to call me skinny and redheaded.
Rachel may have been too outspoken. But she's your elder, a stranger, and my visitor. Three very good reasons why you should have been respectful. She deserves an apology, and you'll go to her and say you're sorry.
I could never do that. You can punish me in any way you like. You can shut me up in a dark dungeon inhabited by snakes and toads, and you can feed me on bread and water, and I shall not complain. Oh, but I cannot ask Mrs. Barry to forgive me.
If you expect to remain under my roof, you'll apologize to Mrs. Barry.
Then I'll leave now. Send me back to the orphanage. I'll never tell Mrs. Barry that I'm sorry.
Matthew walks over as Anne runs off.
Sounds as if she meant it.
Oh, she's determined, all right.
Well, maybe it's best. I've a feeling we would never like her.
Matthew Cuthbert, don't form opinions for me. I never said I do or don't like her. When the time comes, I'll speak my own mind.
Matthew watches Marilla walk into the house. He sets a bucket on the bench, then steps lightly back toward the house. Later, he sneaks into the front hall, shutting the door carefully behind him. He takes off his hat and tiptoes to the stairs. His wary eyes scan the room. Through a window on the staircase, Matthew sees Marilla working in the kitchen. With her back to him, she places items in a cabinet. Matthew rubs his chin in thought, then steals quickly up the stairs, past the window. On the landing, halfway up the stairs, Matthew stops and looks down toward the window, smiling proudly. As he glances upstairs, his smile fades, and he climbs up to the second floor. In her room, Anne packs her bag. Matthew walks in and shuts the door behind him. He watches Anne, his eyebrows raised. She glances sullenly at him, then crosses the room and takes a brush and a few things from a drawer. As she carries them to her bag, a handkerchief drops to the floor. Matthew picks it up and hands it to her.
Thank you, Mr. Cuthbert.
He leans against the bed's footboard.
Well, I see you're leaving.
How could I remain here after all those things Mrs. Barry said about me?
I can see that.
And I'll never say I'm sorry because I'm not. I can't even imagine I'm sorry.
Marilla thinks it's best you're going back. And I don't know but what she's right. It's kind of a lonely place for a little girl here. No other children, you know. And well, after all, you're used to the orphanage, and all your old friends are there. I guess you'd like it better.
She shakes her head slightly.
Of course, if you'd rather stay around here, you can always go to Mrs. Blewett. She'd...
Mr. Cuthbert.
Of course, I might be able to see you sometimes, but perhaps... Well, I guess you'd better go back to the orphanage.
Mr. Cuthbert... Suppose I change my mind.
What about Mrs. Barry? You know, Marilla's a dreadfully determined woman.
I'd just rather die than tell Mrs. Barry I'm sorry.
Don't you think you'd better do it and get it over with? You know, you don't have to be exactly sorry. You can be sort of sorry. And that'd kind of smooth it over.
Well, if you really want me to...
Well, I've been thinking, Anne... It would be terribly lonesome downstairs without you. It seems that the sooner...
I'll do it. You go back downstairs, then I'll come down and tell Miss Cuthbert that I've repented.
Good.
Matthew heads for the door, then turns, his brow furrowed.
Now, don't you tell her that I said anything about it. She might think that I was interfering, and that'd spoil the whole thing. It'll be just our secret, hmm?
Wild horses couldn't drag the secret from me.
He nods and leaves.
How could wild horses drag a secret from anybody?
On the stairs, Matthew peeks through the kitchen window as he passes, then looks up and sees Marilla in the parlor. With her back to him, she cleans the floor with a carpet sweeper. Watching her, Matthew sneaks down the stairs, then strolls into the parlor, swinging his hat nonchalantly. He sits in a chair in front of his sister. Matthew takes out his pipe. Upstairs, Anne walks out onto the second floor landing and peers down into the parlor.
Miss Cuthbert!
Marilla looks up at Anne and steps closer.
What is it?
I'm sorry I lost my temper and said those rude things, and I'm willing to go and tell Mrs. Barry so.
Very well. Go get your hat. I'll take you there at once.
Yes, ma'am.
I knew if we left her alone, she'd come to her senses. Matthew Cuthbert, you must admit I have a way about things.
Matthew lights his pipe and smiles, sighing contentedly. Later, Rachel sits on her porch, sewing. Her daughter Diana reads on the steps. Marilla leads Anne and Matthew up the front walk.
Go in the house, Diana. What is about to happen may not be for your ears.
Oh, Mother.
Go on in.
Diana stands. Behind Marilla, Anne walks with her head down. Rachel stares at them as they approach. Marilla turns to Anne and nods. Anne glances at Matthew, then kneels in front of Rachel.
Mrs. Barry, I'm extremely sorry I behaved so terribly. I should never have disgraced the dear friends who have let me stay at Green Gables, even though I'm not a boy. I'm a dreadfully wicked, ungrateful girl. And I deserve to be punished and cast out by respectable people forever. Every word you said was true. My hair is red, and I am skinny and ugly. What I said about you was true, too, but I shouldn't have said it. Oh, please, Mrs. Barry, Please, please forgive me. If you refuse, it will be a lifelong sorrow to me. You wouldn't want to inflict a lifelong sorrow on a poor little orphan, would you? Oh, I'm sure you wouldn't. Oh, Mrs. Barry, please say you'll forgive me.
There, there, get up, child. Of course I forgive you. I guess I was a little hard on you. But you mustn't mind me. And don't worry about your hair. I knew a girl once. Her hair was every bit as red as yours when she was young. When she grew up, it darkened to a real handsome auburn.
You've given me hope. I shall always feel that you're a benefactor.
Come here, dear.
In the garden, Diana steps out of hiding and walks up to the porch.
Yes, Mother?
This is my little girl, Diana.
This is Anne Shirley.
Anne spelled with an E.
Hello. Hello.
Diana, you may take Anne out in the garden and show her the flowers.
Oh, I just love that.
All right. Come on.
The girls head off, arm in arm.
Matthew and I were thinking that though we haven't exactly decided to keep her, she ought to go to school.
I'll be glad to have Diana pick her up in the morning.
The next morning, Anne washes dishes. Marilla comes downstairs into the kitchen, carrying her knitting in a shallow basket. She stands next to Anne and watches her work.
Well, you wash dishes pretty well.
Oh, I'm better at looking after children, though. I had so much experience at the orphanage. It's such a pity you haven't any here for me to look after.
I don't feel as if I wanted any more children to look after than I've got at present. You're problem enough in all conscience.
Anne smiles as Marilla walks to the doorway.
What's to be done with you, I don't know. That Matthew was the most aggravating man.
Oh, I think your brother's lovely. I felt he was a kindred spirit as soon as ever I saw him.
Well, you're both odd enough, if that's what you mean.
Marilla carries her knitting to the dining room table and sits. Anne passes through the room with a dish towel, then returns to the kitchen. She wears a checkered apron.
Now, don't get it into your head. We've definitely decided to keep you. But in the meantime, your schooling mustn't be neglected. Diana will be here any minute now. Thank you.
I'll try to be good in school. Of course, it will be uphill work.
Remember, behavior is as important as fine marks. I'm expecting both from you.
What am I to call you? Shall I always say Miss Cuthbert, or may I call you Aunt Marilla?
Marilla softens.
No, you can call me just plain Marilla. I'm not used to being called Miss Cuthbert. It'll make me nervous.
Oh, but I'd love to call you Aunt Marilla.
I'm not your aunt, and I don't believe in calling people names that don't belong to them.
But you could imagine you were my aunt.
I could not.
Don't you ever imagine things differently from what they really are?
No.
I never imagine things differently from what they really are. Oh, Marilla, how much you miss.
Later, at the schoolhouse, two boys play tic-tac-toe. Anne stands at the teacher's desk.
What's your name?
My name is Anne Shirley. Anne spelled with an E.
The school children watch Anne.
We pride ourselves on our scholastic record, and we hope that you...
Oh, I'm sure I will, Mr. Phillips. You see, my father was a teacher and my mother was a teacher. And so that gives us something in common, don't you think?
You will share the desk with Diana Barry.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Diana's my bosom friend.
Never mind that. I'll get your history later.
I can tell you that right now.
A freckled boy smiles at Anne.
Halifax. My father's name is Walter Shirley. My mother's name is Bertha Shirley. Aren't those lovely names? Oh, I'm so glad that my parents had names that were real nice. It would be such a disgrace to have a father name of, say, Hezekiah.
It doesn't matter what a person's name is as long as he behaves himself.
Well, I don't know. I read in a book once that a rose by any other name would smell as sweet. But I've never been able to believe it. I don't think a rose would be as nice if we're called a thistle or a skunk cabbage.
Will you please take your seat with Diana?
Yes, sir.
Anne picks up her books and sits next to Diana, glancing coolly back at a girl who stares over her shoulder.
Now we will resume our geography lesson where we left off yesterday. And I want you to pay particular attention.
As Anne watches the teacher at the blackboard, Diana nudges her. Anne looks over at the freckled Gilbert, who smiles at her and mouths hello. Shifting her gaze away, Anne stares straight ahead. Gilbert smiles and faces forward. As Anne glances at him again, he catches her and winks. She quickly lowers her eyes. Gilbert's smile dissolves into a scowl. Then he glimpses a sketch drawn on his pad. Showing Anne the drawing of a stern-faced man, he whispers, "It's the teacher." Anne turns up her nose, and Gilbert glowers.
Belgrade is the capital of Serbia.
Carrots.
You mean hateful boy!
Ow!
Anne breaks her slate over Gilbert's head. The teacher rushes over.
Well, Anne Shirley, I must say this is very nice behavior for your first day in school.
Anne drops her gaze. Gilbert rubs his head.
It was my fault, Mr. Phillips.
I teased her. I'm used to the eccentricities of Gilbert Blythe. But I'm sorry to see a new pupil display such temper. Come up to the platform.
Mr. Phillips marches to the blackboard.
Face the class.
Eyes downcast, Anne stands in the front of the room, facing her classmates. As the teacher writes on the board, Gilbert brushes slate from his jacket, and the other students whisper and fidget. Anne stares at the floor.
Anne?
She turns to face him.
You will write that 100 times.
Anne reads his writing. Anne Shirley has a very bad temper. Anne is spelled without an E. Anne takes a piece of chalk and steps up to the blackboard. She makes a face at the teacher behind his back, then begins to write. Later, Anne's writing covers the blackboard. She picks up an eraser, then looks at the teacher's first line and glances back at him. Anne determinedly adds an E to the end of her name, then erases her handwritten lines.
Who's dismissed?
Children stream out of the classroom, gathering in a hall to get their hats and lunch buckets. Gilbert waits outside the door. He holds his books, tied together with a leather strap. Anne walks past him, her nose in the air.
I'm awful sorry I made fun of your hair.
Anne glances at him.
Honest I am.
She turns coolly away, and Diana follows her out. Gilbert frowns.
First time I ever heard Gilbert Blythe apologize for anything. You should be angry with him for making fun of your hair. He called me towhead.
There's a great difference between being called a towhead and being called carrots. I shall never forgive him. Gilbert Blythe has hurt my feelings excruciatingly.
Later, at Green Gables, Marilla sews in the dining room as Anne returns home.
Anne?
Yes, sir?
Never mind appearing so innocent. I've heard all about it. And your first day at school.
But Marilla, it
Don't you dare stop me. I'm so ashamed of you, I don't know where to begin. What do you mean, breaking slates over other students' heads?
He called me carrot.
I don't care what he called you. You had no right to lose your temper.
He hadn't any right to say it. And I think that Gilbert Blythe is a...
Who did you say it was?
Gilbert Blythe.
Softening, Marilla purses her lips and looks down at her sewing.
Did you smash your slate?
Yes.
Oh, go upstairs and get ready for supper.
Anne stares at her.
Run along, you must be starved.
Later, Anne churns butter while Diana threads beads on a string.
That's what I couldn't understand. I thought Marilla would give me a tanning, or at least a talking to, but she didn't even give me a tug at the ear.
I should have told you Marilla doesn't like Gilbert. It isn't his fault, either. It's his father's.
Why, Diana, what do you mean?
Well, one night when Mother thought I was asleep, I heard her talking to Mrs. Blair. It was something about Gilbert's father running away with the girl that was to marry Matthew. And Mother said Matthew was never the same after that. Marilla didn't get married either because she thought it was her duty to take care of Matthew.
Diana, this is terribly interesting. What else did they say?
Mrs. Blair said that Gilbert isn't even allowed to set foot on the Cuthbert property.
Anne's eyes narrow as Marilla comes out of the house and waters the plants.
I'm going to find out more about this.
Diana takes up the churning as Anne approaches Marilla and stands, looking over her shoulder.
Warm day, isn't it?
Not too warm to do your churning.
Marilla, would you mind if I ask you sort of a personal question?
What is it?
Well, are you sure you're not harboring any ill feeling against me? Because I broke my slate over Gilbert Blythe's head?
You probably had just cause. Do you think it's nice to invite Diana here to do your work? Run along now.
Anne and Diana share a smile.
I'm gonna try Matthew.
Later, Anne watches Matthew mend a fence.
And so poor Juliet died, and so did Romeo. Now, wasn't that sad?
Yes.
Just think of it. The both of them dead in the full bloom of youth. All because two families fought with each other. You don't think people act that way today, do you?
And when you get as old as I am, you'll know the world hasn't changed very much.
Did you know that I hit Gilbert Blythe over the head with my slate?
I heard something about it. You know, I like that story about Romeo and Juliet.
Do you know any up-to-date stories like that, Mr. Cuthbert?
No. And if I were you, I wouldn't tell the ones you imagine around here. Especially to Marilla.
Oh, I won't if you don't want me to. But I'd sort of like to know why.
Well, Marilla doesn't believe in stories.
Is that the only reason?
It's getting kind of late, Anne. I think we better start for the house.
Later, Anne and Diana sit in the parlor.
Love, marriage, friendship, courtship, hate. Love, marriage...
Marilla.
Anne jumps up and dusts a chair.
Good morning, Marilla.
Morning, Diana.
Marilla picks up a covered basket and Anne smiles.
Marilla, you look perfectly scrumptious.
Well, you wouldn't expect a body would go to the ladies' aid in their kitchen clothes, would you?
Someday I'm going to have a brooch like that. Oh, I think amethysts are lovely. That's what I used to imagine diamonds were like. Such lovely, glimmering purple stones. Marilla, would it be asking too much if someday you granted me the privilege of wearing it for just an hour?
We'll see.
Oh, I should love to see it on my green brocade with the rippling flounce.
Why don't you wear it on your foulard, the one with the big white spots on it?
Well, don't you think it would look nicer on my taffeta?
What are you two babbling about?
Diana and I have been imagining what we should wear on the hayride. Of course, it wouldn't really matter what the dress was made of as long as it had puff sleeves.
Matthew's eyes light up and he smiles warmly.
Stop chattering. Run along to school.
The girls walk past Matthew into the front hall.
Matthew, get my lunch basket.
Anne puts on a straw hat.
Oh, Marilla, may I tell Mr. Phillips I'm going on the hayride?
I'll think about it when the time comes.
Bye, Marilla. Bye, Matthew.
The girls leave for school. Later, at the edge of a creek near a small footbridge, Gilbert crouches down to wash a jar in the water. As Anne and Diana cross the bridge, he watches, unnoticed.
Is Marilla going with you on the hayride?
I don't suppose so.
Matthew?
I think he would if I asked him.
If he hadn't fought with Gilbert, he might have taken you.
What makes you think he wouldn't now? All I have to do is wave my little finger at Gilbert's line, and he'll come a begging.
Gilbert smiles. Later, in the kitchen of Green Gables, Anne slices bread and makes two neat stacks on a plate, then sets the plate on the table. Wearing a pinafore over her dress, she gets saucers, cups, and a glass from the pantry. Plaid bows adorn her braided pigtails. As Anne sets the table, Matthew sneaks into the kitchen.
Where's Marilla?
In her room.
Matthew gives Anne a parcel wrapped in paper.
Here, open this up. I'll keep watch.
Anne unties the string and unfolds the paper. Her mouth drops open in an awed smile. She holds up a floral dress.
Puffed sleeves.
She squeezes it to her chest, smiling blissfully, then runs over to Matthew and stares at him.
For the first time in my life, I've run out of words. I just don't know how to thank you.
She kisses him quickly on the cheek. His eyes bulge.
Anne!
Anne and Matthew look toward the stairs.
Anne Shirley!
Yes'm!
Anne gives Matthew the dress and he hurries away with it.
Have you seen my amethyst brooch?
Why, yes,
did I... Did you touch it?
Why, yes, I just pinned it on to see how it would look.
What right did you meddle with my brooch? Where'd you put it?
I put it right back up on the bureau. Honest, Marilla, I didn't mean to meddle, and I promise I'll never do it again. You know, that's one good thing about me. I never do the same wrong thing twice.
Anne, the brooch is gone. You were the last person to handle it. Now tell me the truth. Did you take it out and lose it?
No, I didn't.
Anne Shirley, you're telling a falsehood. Now go to your room. And you'll stay there until you confess, even if it takes a month of Sundays.
If you'll just let me out for the hayride, I'll stay in my room as long as you like, cheerfully. But I've just got to go to the hayride.
You'll go to no hayride nor anywhere else until you tell me the truth.
Anne walks upstairs. Later, Marilla sews while Matthew flips through a catalog. He glances worriedly toward the stairs.
The youngster ought to be made to eat something.
Matthew, I've been telling you it's no use. I've taken two trays up to her and she won't touch a thing. All I can get out of her is I'm too overwrought to think of eating.
Would you mind if I tried to get her to take something?
Now, Diana sits in a tree outside Anne's window.
How much longer do you think it'll be?
Forever. Don't you see, Diana? I can't have Marilla believe I took that brooch.
Then you won't be able to go on the hayride, will you?
That's what makes me grieve. I so wanted to go.
Oh, I wouldn't be too upset about it. Anyway, I heard that Gilbert's going to take Alice Wainwright.
I'd like to go, if for no other reason, than to show you I can make Gilbert Blythe eat right out of my hand.
Anne walks out of her room, head held high. She stands on the landing, looking down at Matthew and Marilla.
Marilla, I'm ready to confess.
I expected you'd be. Come downstairs and let me hear what you have to say.
I took the amethyst brooch. I didn't mean to, but it was so beautiful, I was overcome with irresistible temptation. I was imagining I was Lady Cordelia Fitzgerald, and it was so much easier to imagine I was Lady Cordelia if I had the amethyst brooch on. Then I strolled through Lover's Lane, and when I got to the bridge, I took it off to have another look at it. Then I leaned over to see my reflection in the Lake of the Shining Waters, and the brooch slipped through my fingers and went down, 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 and sank from sight forever.
Marilla scowls.
And that's the best I can do at confessing, Marilla. Now may I go on the hayride?
No!
You promised I could if I confessed.
You're not going on the hayride, and that's final. Mrs. Barry was right. She warned me from the first. I should have known.
Marilla!
Matthew rises from his chair and walks deliberately toward her, his eyes fixed in a stern, unblinking gaze. Reaching for Marilla's shawl, he reveals the large rectangular brooch caught in the crocheted fringe. He untangles it and hands it to Marilla, who stares open-mouthed. Matthew grins, raising his eyebrows. Putting his hands in his pockets, he walks away. Anne smiles after him, and Marilla turns to her.
Anne, what did you mean by saying you took it and lost it?
Well, you said you'd keep me in my room till I confessed, so I just thought up a confession and made it as interesting as I could.
Marilla puts her hands on her hips and shakes her head. Later, at the hayride, boys in suits and girls in flower print dresses crowd onto a hay-covered wagon. Anne and Diana stand to the side, looking at Gilbert. Diana smiles as Anne puffs up her short sleeves.
Now you just watch.
Anne saunters over to Gilbert, who regards her briefly and walks past.
Good evening, Mr. Blythe.
Anne stares at him, but Gilbert ignores her.
Hey, Joe, hold this one.
I'm ready to forgive you.
Gilbert stands in front of a little boy playing the accordion and pretends to conduct him. The boy rolls his eyes. Diana approaches the wagon.
Hello, Diana.
Hello, Gilbert.
He helps her up, then takes another girl's hand.
But you'd never get here. Come on, you sit right up here. Right there, and I'll sit beside you.
Gilbert helps her onto the wagon, then stares at Anne as he climbs up the ladder. Anne looks down.
Come on, Anne.
She looks up at Gilbert, then climbs onto the wagon. Later, Gilbert sits at the edge of a wooded path. Spotting Anne, he picks up his things and smooths his hair. Anne strides past him.
Good morning, Miss Shirley. Have a good time on the hayride?
Gilbert follows her.
You're not angry, are you?
I would appreciate it exceedingly, Mr. Blythe, if you would stop annoying me.
Oh, let's forget it, Anne. I only took her because
I... wouldn't have gone with you anyway. Furthermore, I promised myself never to speak to you again.
Let's call it quits, huh?
It is impolite to pass a person without at least nodding. So from now on, I'm merely nodding to you.
Why don't you come off your high horse?
If I tolerate you at all, Mr. Blythe, it's because you're a character.
I'm a what?
A character.
I don't understand you.
Well, if you must know, Mr. Phillips is a character, and Matthew's a character, and you're a character.
I think you read too much.
He holds her arm.
Please let me go. I'll be late.
Will you let me walk home with you after school?
I should say not.
One of these days you'll be glad to have me for a beau.
I have a beau.
Oh, and he's a character too?
No, I like him.
Well, then why wasn't he on the hayride?
He's too grown up for such things.
Anne marches off. Now at school.
The results of the annual essay contest among the junior students of the Prince of Wales College were announced yesterday.
Anne and Gilbert walk into the full classroom. Anne hurries to her desk, and Mr. Phillips looks up just as Gilbert reaches his desk. Gilbert shoots Anne a cold glance, then takes his seat.
I've just been reading from a newspaper article about one of my former pupils, who, incidentally, was never tardy.
Anne bows her head.
This former pupil of mine, Herbert Root, has just won the Junior Student's Prize in an essay contest. I'll read further from the article.
Diana watches as Anne writes on her notepad. Gilbert squints to read it.
He took for his subject...
Anne looks up at the teacher, then tears the paper out of her pad and drops the note on the floor. The girl in front of Anne moves to pick it up, but Gilbert glares at her, then takes the note. It reads, Anne Shirley, love Herbert Root, courtship. Gilbert scowls over at Anne as he crumples the note into a ball and throws it aside. Later, at lunch, Anne, Diana, and a dark-haired girl sit near the footbridge over the creek. Gilbert and another boy lunch nearby.
I'll make Mr. Phillips forget all about Herbert Root when I get to Charlottetown.
I think Herbert is the smartest boy on Prince Edward Island.
What do you happen to know?
I said Herbert Root is the smartest boy on the island, and you, Gilbert Blythe, are annoyingly inquisitive.
Gilbert grimaces at the girls.
Anybody think you know Herbie?
Wouldn't you be surprised if I told you that we've corresponded for a long, long time? As a matter of fact, Gilbert Blythe, Herbert Root was to have taken me on the hayride. Only he couldn't get here in time.
Why, what? Really?
How long have you known him?
Later, in the classroom, the children take their seats. A young man sits by the teacher's desk. Mr. Phillips rings a bell.
My dear pupils, last week I discussed with you a young man of whom I'm very proud. Herbert Root.
Anne's eyes widen.
Herbert, we are all very happy to have you here today. And would you be so good as to say a few words to the class?
Of course.
Herbert stands, his hair parted in the center and slicked back.
My success in the main, Mr. Phillips, was due to your teaching. I held before me constantly the text of many of your lectures, to wit that no definite rules are necessary for fine writing. I chose for my subject The Lady of Shalott because it presented an interesting problem, an unrequited love. There was no question in my mind but what the Lady of Shalott loved Lancelot. But there was a question in my mind as to whether he even knew her. Hence, I placed particular emphasis on that portion of the poem, from the time she decided to lie down in death on the boat to Lancelot's memorable line, "She has a lovely face, etc., the Lady of Shalott." And that's how I won the contest.
Gilbert shoots Anne a confused glance.
And now, my pupils, I will declare a short recess that you may meet Herbert and ask him any questions.
Gilbert grins at Anne, then gets up and leans over her shoulder. She glances at him, then sets her chin.
Aren't you going to speak to him? Or are you just going to correspond with him?
Go on, Anne.
Anne's lips twitch in a slight smile. Then she stands and walks slowly to the front of the room. Joining the crowd around the teacher's desk, she stands timidly in front of Herbert.
Writing volumes of words. I should like to have a copy of your essay, Herbert. I would prize it.
Certainly, Mr. Phillips.
Hello.
The students stare at Anne. Herbert looks at Mr. Phillips.
Hello.
How do you do?
Herbert turns back to his essay. Anne's eyes well with tears. She looks back at Gilbert and Diana. Gilbert's grin fades and Diana frowns sadly. Anne runs out of the room. Now, on a river, Matthew rows a boat up to a dock, then ties on a line. Picking up a basket and a fishing rod, he steps carefully onto the dock and sees Anne sitting on a staircase, staring sullenly at the ground. Matthew tilts his head as he approaches.
Something wrong, Anne?
I've come to the conclusion that a good imagination is a bad thing. And there's no romance in the world.
No. You mustn't think that way. There is such a thing as romance.
If it ever comes near me, I'll let it pass right by. I'll give it up.
No. Don't ever give it all up, Anne. A little of it is a good thing. Not too much, of course. But keep a little of it. Just a little.
Matthew pats Anne on the shoulder, then takes his fishing pole and basket and walks away. Anne sits alone and stares thoughtfully. Straightening, she looks toward Matthew's boat, then leans back and gazes off again, her eyes unblinking.
Down she came and found a boat beneath a willow, left afloat. And round about the prow she wrote, "The Lady of Shalott."
Anne stands, dreamy-eyed, wearing a pinstriped dress with black stockings and shoes. She walks over to Matthew's boat. Two large checkered bows adorn her pigtails. Anne steps carefully into the boat and unties the line. As she pushes away from the dock, the current carries her slowly out onto the river. Later, Anne sits in the boat, her back straight and her chin held high. She picks up an oar and paddles a short way, then throws the oar into the water. She takes the other oar from the boat and tosses it overboard. The current pulls the boat farther downriver.
And at the closing of the day, she loosed the chain and down she lay.
Anne looks down at the boat and smiles. Leaning back, she stretches her legs out over the seats, then lays down and crosses her arms over her chest.
The broad stream bore her far away, the Lady of Shalott.
Anne closes her eyes.
And ere she reached upon the tide, the first house by the waterside, singing in her song, she died, the Lady of Shalott.
Anne casts her hand beside her and touches water. The boat is nearly full. Quickly sitting up, Anne cups her hands and bails. The boat drifts toward a tree stump in the middle of the river. Anne tries to push off, but the boat hits and the stern swings out. With the bow nearly underwater, Anne climbs to the back of the boat. She kneels, her skirt wet through, and scoops out more water with her hands. On shore, Gilbert squints as he spots Anne on the river, the left side of her boat submerged. He runs along the bank. Ahead, a fallen tree hangs over the water. Anne stands in the boat and grabs hold of a branch. As she dangles above the swift river, Gilbert dashes over.
Hang on, Anne.
He climbs onto the tree.
Don't be afraid now.
Gilbert grabs her hand, then pulls her up, holding her arms around his neck. Sitting next to him with an arm around his shoulder, Anne rests her head against his chest. Gilbert smiles, and Anne pulls away.
Oh, it's you.
Yes, ma'am. And I bet you're glad I'm here, too.
I'm overwhelmingly grateful to you, Mr. Gilbert Blythe. And I thank you very kindly.
They climb ashore.
And I saved your life, too. I'm a hero.
A real hero would guard such a secret to his dying moment. And he never breathed a word of it, not to anybody.
Oh, I wouldn't tell. You know I wouldn't.
You swear on your word of honor?
Cross my heart.
This must remain our very own secret. No, I've reconsidered. We can never have a secret because you hurt my feelings excruciatingly. You made fun of my hair.
That's because
I just couldn't keep my eyes off it. It was kind of nice looking at it. Only when I tried to tell you about it, I guess I didn't say it right.
Why, Gilbert Blythe, you really mean that?
Mm-hmm.
Then I shall relent. After all, you did save my life. You are entitled to a reward. And I shall kiss you.
Gilbert backs away from her.
You don't claim your reward?
Yes, I do. Anne, I want you to be my girl.
Anne smiles. Later, in different clothes, Anne sits on the fallen tree. Gilbert stands nearby.
You know I've always liked you.
That's why I teased you. Then why did you take Alice Wainwright on the hayride?
Anne, you've got a memory like an elephant. Why can't you forget a thing that happened over a year ago?
Why should I? You hurt me terribly.
Gilbert sits beside her.
Well, you are going to wrap me around your little finger.
Did Diana tell you that?
Oh, honestly.
Then how'd you know?
I've never told you this before, but I can see things ahead, long before they've happened. I'm a mind reader.
You're an eavesdropper.
Will I see you tonight?
Why ask me? You're the mind reader.
Anne returns his smile. Later, a bird builds a nest in the fallen tree. Anne meets Gilbert, her hair cut short.
Hello, Anne.
Why, I thought I'd never get away.
Gee, you're brave meeting me here. I wonder what would happen if Marilla ever found out.
Let's hope she never does. I wouldn't know what to do.
Got something for you. Close your eyes. Hold out your hands.
He places a small box tied with a bow in her hands. She opens it excitedly.
A locket. I've always wanted one. Oh, Gilbert.
I bought it at Jim Lawson's, and it's guaranteed not to turn green.
It's beautiful. But how can
I ever... Don't worry about it. You can wear it out when you're not around Marilla and Matthew. You can tuck it in when you're home.
He puts the necklace on her. Later, snow falls as Anne walks to the tree.
Happy birthday.
Thank you, Anne.
She gives him a gift. Rachel Berry watches from the bushes.
Oh, gee, they're swell.
Socks.
If it weren't so cold, I'd put them on right now.
I finished them last night. What was that?
Nothing.
I think I better run back.
Goodbye, sweetheart.
That's the first time you've ever called me that.
Do you mind?
I've been wanting you to for 3 years.
They kiss, and Anne runs off. Rachel nods her head. Later, at Green Gables.
Kissing. Anne Shirley kissing. Anne Shirley kissing that Blythe boy. Mrs. Barry saw it with her own two eyes. She rushed right up here to tell me. Well, why don't you say something, Matthew Cuthbert?
Well, that's interesting.
Interesting? You should be ashamed of yourself sitting there and taking it so casual-like.
Well, they're just youngsters.
Youngsters, fiddlesticks. I wager they've been meeting at that place for heaven knows how long. And you've probably known it all along.
No, Marilla. I've never been down near that tree.
How'd you know it was by a tree?
Matthew smiles.
A person can imagine things.
You stop acting so innocent-like.
Well, after all, Marilla, you know a body can only be young once, and Anne has...
You stop protecting her. That girl's an ingrate. After all we've done for her, to take up with Gilbert Blythe.
Anne walks in the front door and takes off her coat. Marilla and Matthew turn to watch her. As she sits to take off her boots, she notices them. Her smile fades. Anne stands as Marilla marches over.
Anne Shirley, when we took you in, I never would have dreamed that...
Now, Marilla!
You keep your oar out of this, Matthew. You know what I'm talking about, and you know what we think of Gilbert Blythe.
Please, Marilla!
Anne runs upstairs.
Why must you say things that... Wait, Marilla. I don't see any use in trying to make matters worse.
Matthew holds Marilla's arm, but she shakes him loose. In her room, Anne leans against the door, her eyes fixed on the floor. Moving to the bed, she sits, looking out the window, then throws herself across a pillow. Marilla barges into the room and gapes at Anne as she cries on her pillow. With a tight-lipped frown, Marilla walks to the bed.
Anne, I don't want to hurt you by referring to what I consider your indebtedness to us. But I want you to promise me you'll never see Gilbert Blythe again.
Please, Marilla.
I'll not leave this room until I hear you say you'll not see him again.
Anne stares through the rungs of her headboard, shaking her head as tears run down her cheeks. Later, at the tree, Gilbert turns around excitedly. His smile fades as Marilla strides up. Taking a step back, Gilbert removes his hat.
This tree is the dividing line between the Blythe and Cuthbert properties, and I never thought I'd live to see the day when I would be compelled to cross it. I've come to talk to you about Anne. It's high time somebody did. Don't think I've had my eyes shut and my ears closed all along. And don't think I'm going to let that girl go on sacrificing herself and suffering for it.
But, Miss Cuthbert,
this much you ought to know. Anne's not a child. She knows what she owes us, and she knows what her responsibilities are. That girl has ambitions to make something of herself. She's going to normal school as soon as she's ready, and she can't let anything stand in our way.
Gilbert eyes her, slack-jawed.
I wouldn't stand in her way for anything in the world.
No friend of hers would. No friend of hers would even try to see her anymore. As far as Anne is concerned, all this fool carrying on was a mistake. And it's got to stop. Stop right now.
As Marilla walks away, Gilbert stares after her. Now, a note reads, "We cared for each other, of course. You have a right to your own mind. But after all, it would have hurt less if you had told me yourself." Anne looks up from the note and turns to a boy.
Tell him he doesn't understand. Tell him I'll see him the first minute I can steal away.
Won't be any use. He was all packed up when he wrote the note. Just told me to bring it to you. I asked him where he was going, but he wouldn't tell me.
Anne shakes her head slightly. Now at Green Gables in the kitchen, Marilla cuts a big slice of layer cake with dark frosting, then wraps it carefully in tissue paper and puts it in a box. Matthew leans glumly against the sink, watching her. He wears a coat and a scarf.
That ought to hold her for the trip. There's no call for you to be looking like a lost calf. I'm just fixing to make it harder for everyone.
Fixing to do anything the sort. I've seen lots of people go away in trains in my lifetime.
What makes your nose so red and twitchy then?
Well, that's a frostbitten nose. Got a right to look red and to twitch too.
I don't like people who get emotional over nothing. Anne, hurry up. Expect that train to wait for you?
I'm coming.
Marilla eyes Matthew.
What gave you the idea our schooling was going to pinch us?
I never said any such thing.
In the kitchen, Matthew ties a string around the cake box.
Then don't even think it. Fine thing that would be for Anne to get wind of.
Upstairs, Anne comes out of her room carrying a large bag. Wearing a dark hat and coat with a white plaid scarf, she walks downstairs and stands in front of Matthew and Marilla. Matthew moves to take her bag.
No, you mustn't come with me. I've already asked Eddie Grant to drive me to the station. I couldn't bear to say goodbye to you in front of all those people. I might cry.
Getting emotional over nothing.
Nothing? Why, you've been angels to me. You're both such darlings, and you're never... I've just got to kiss you.
Anne grabs Marilla and kisses her on the lips. Marilla holds her tightly.
Hold her all. Kissing. Might as well kiss him too, I suppose.
Anne kisses Matthew tenderly on the cheek. She grabs her bag, then takes the box from Marilla and rushes out the door. Marilla and Matthew stand in the doorway, staring after her. The shadows of tree branches line their faces and clothes. Marilla's eyes glisten with tears.
I can't help thinking, I wish she'd always stayed a little girl. Nobody can deny she's real tall and stylish.
Nobody? Nobody at all. She's smart, too. And pretty. And loving.
You know, Matthew, I get afraid when I think of it. She'll be away so long. I get terrible lonesome.
That was a lucky mistake, Mrs. Spencer's. when she didn't bring us a boy?
Who wanted a boy?
Nobody. I certainly didn't.
Nor I. So you see, it wasn't luck that brought her here. It was Providence. We needed her.
Even with all her odd ways?
I loved her for them. Who said they were odd ways?
Nobody. I certainly didn't.
Matthew shifts his gaze away from Marilla's stern glare. Now, an envelope addressed to Miss Anne Shirley at Queen's Normal School, Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island, from Diana Barry Roberts, Avonlea, Prince Edward Island. Written in neat cursive, the letter reads, "And much has happened in the long time you have been away. And now for the big surprise, I was married last week." Anne lowers the letter and smiles. Later, she hugs her friend.
Diana! Oh, how glad I am to see you. Well, turn around and let me look at you. You've grown so.
Oh, Anne, and you've become prettier.
They put their arms around each other.
And you're a married woman. Tell me, are you very happy and very much in love?
Yes, Anne, very much.
How wonderful that must be, to think of him all the time and know that he's thinking of you. And nobody can interfere. That must be happiness.
Oh, Anne, someday you and Gilbert will... He's back. Did you know he was studying medicine?
Yes, I knew. At least, I thought he would.
You never hear from him?
Anne shakes her head.
Dr. Tatum says that when Gilbert graduates, he's going to make him his assistant.
Please, Diana, let's not talk of Gilbert.
I'm still your bosom friend.
But I...
Anne's eyes tear up. She shakes her head, then stands and walks to a window. Clutching the wall with one hand, Anne stares outside.
Tell me about everybody. Did you see Matthew and Marilla before you left?
Yes, but I only stayed a few minutes. Matthew is pretty sick to be bothered with visitors.
Matthew sick?
Oh, Anne, I'm sorry. I thought you knew.
I should have known when he didn't write. That's why I was always Marilla. I must get back to Green Gables.
But how can you leave now? Your final examinations are just 2 weeks off.
I can't help that. I'd never forgive myself if anything happened to them.
But you've worked so hard, and now you're going to throw it all away.
They need me.
Later, a buggy carries Anne through Avonlea. Wearing a suit and a black hat with a white flower, she stares worriedly into the distance. Later, Anne walks up to Green Gables. Marilla opens the door to her.
Why, Anne!
Marilla!
Anne, why did you
How's
come back?
How's Matthew? May I see him?
Not now, dear. Dr. Tatum's with him. Oh, I'm sorry you found out. Matthew didn't want you to know. He said it might upset your schoolwork.
Upstairs, the doctor leaves Matthew's room. Shutting the door carefully behind him, he scratches his chin. Anne meets him at the bottom of the stairs.
Well, Anne Shirley, how are you?
Fine, thanks, Dr. Tatum. May I see Matthew?
Better not disturb him now. He's just dozed off to sleep. And if we waken him, the excitement of seeing you here might sort of set him back.
Anne shifts her gaze from the doctor to Marilla.
Marilla, would you mind fixing me a pot of tea?
Marilla smiles and heads for the kitchen, her face drawn. Anne and the doctor watch her leave.
Dr. Tatum, tell me. I want to know.
It's serious, Anne.
Isn't there anything we can do?
Well, the folks are in a pretty bad way.
You mean financially?
It would mean bringing in another doctor. The best man in Canada. He's in Nova Scotia. That would cost an awful lot of money.
Well, we have to get the money somehow.
They've sold about everything they could. Why, even the house is mortgaged.
Yes. They've deprived themselves of everything just to keep me in school.
What's the name of that doctor in Nova Scotia?
Terry. Frederick W. Terry. Gilbert Blythe has been studying under him. I wish they'd have had such men when I went to school.
Now, Gilbert sits at a desk writing.
Come in.
A young lady to see you, Mr. Gilbert.
Have her come in.
Anne enters. Gilbert beams.
Anne!
Stepping close, he stares at her adoringly. She looks down.
Hello, Gilbert. I hope you don't mind my coming to see you. I had to.
Gilbert takes her arm and leads her to a chair.
You know, it's wonderful to see you again, Anne. I've missed you terribly.
We mustn't talk about that. I promised Marilla that...
We've grown up since then, Anne.
There's nothing we can do, Gilbert. And I owe them so much. Now more than ever. Since Matthew's illness, they're almost destitute.
It'll be all right, Anne. Did you come to see me about Dr. Terry?
Yes. How did you know?
Dr. Tatum told me he was needed.
Then...
Taking her hand, Gilbert walks Anne to a window and pulls back a lacy curtain. Outside, a buggy drives down the path.
That's Dr. Terry. I sent for him yesterday.
Gilbert closes the curtain.
Gilbert!
Anne hugs him. Later, at Green Gables, the doctor walks out of Matthew's room.
Hello, Doctor.
Hi, Gilbert.
Is he all right? May I see him now?
I think it'll be all right. I wouldn't get him too excited, however.
Anne hurries into the room where Matthew lies in bed, Marilla at his side. Matthew raises his hand. Anne takes it and sits on the bed, leaning over him.
Matthew.
Gilbert and the doctor watch from the hall.
Very interesting case. Quite similar to one I had in Toronto.
Gilbert and Dr. Terry walk downstairs. Matthew looks over at Marilla.
Fine young man, that Gilbert Blythe.
Marilla frowns and straightens in her seat. Matthew strokes Anne's chin.
He might have been my boy once.
Marilla nods firmly and rises with a determined gaze.
Marilla, where are you going?
Get Gilbert Blythe and bring him right back here.
Matthew and Anne share a smile. Words appear. The end. Now a logo shows an inverted triangle with a lightning bolt running from top to bottom. Radio Pictures. Credits appear. The cast of characters. Anne Shirley as Anne, Tom Brown as Gilbert, O.P. Heggie as Matthew, Helen Wesley as Marilla, Sarah Hayden as Mrs. Barry, Murray Cannell as Mr. Phillips, Gertrude Messenger as Diana, Charlie Grapewin as Dr. Tatum, Hilda Vaughn as Mrs. Blewett, and June Preston as the Blewett little girl.